Welcome to Next Us 818 Podcast, a reflective platform for connecting past successes with future progress in the African American community. I'm your host, Dr. JC. The inaugural season of Next Us 818 Podcast focuses on the 6888 Central Postal Directorate Battalion, the only all African American female battalion to serve in the European Theater of Operations during World War II. If you're tuning into the podcast for the very first time, I encourage you to check out the inaugural episode from September 7th of 2022 to learn about the background of the 6888 Battalion. In episode 22, we will recap the inaugural 6888 Legacy Tour that took place this June. The genesis of the 6888 Legacy Tour occurred a mere 10 months ago. During the preparation for my very first podcast interview, I said to my guest, it would be amazing to go to Scotland, England, and France to retrace the steps of our mothers, grandmothers, and aunts. At the time, I had absolutely no idea how to pull off or pull together a World War II related tour. I just knew that I wanted to walk where my mom served and that I would do it even if solo. So I contacted retired Colonel Edna Cummings and asked if she knew anyone who could help curate such a tour. By the way, Colonel Cummings was my guest in episode 20, so please check out that episode. Edna reached out to the wonderful Stephen Ambrose Historical Tours in New Orleans. They specialize in World War II tours. From this series of contacts, the 6888 Legacy Tour evolved and came to fruition in June of 2023. To help me recap the tour, my guest tonight is retired U.S. Army Major Natasha Hines. Natasha was one of the 6888 advocates on the tour, and she wrote a wonderful tour recap beginning in Birmingham and ending in Paris. Welcome, Natasha.
Thank you so much.
It's great to have you. The tour was a great tour, so we're going to look forward to sharing the steps with my audience today and sharing your insights as well. So I'll talk a little bit about the pre-tour. The pre-tour started in Glasgow, Scotland, and I was privileged to be among the 9 descendants and advocates on that pre-tour. I must say that traveling to Glasgow through Heathrow Airport in London was an adventure worth missing. Those who flew through Iceland and Amsterdam had more favorable experiences, I have to say. Once assembled, the pre-tour participants walked the grounds of the two ports used by the 6888 soldiers. In February of 1945, the first group of 6888 soldiers embarked in Green Rock, Scotland, after 9 days at sea, dodging German U-boats. In March of 1945, the second group of soldiers embarked at Gourock, Scotland, after 5 days at sea. We walked along the shores. We took time to ponder how our 6888 ancestors must have felt. Mid-1940s war zone, young African-American women on foreign soil facing the unknown. For me, this reinforced their bravery and their sense of adventure. We were hosted by the University of Glasgow professor, Dr. Timothy Peacock, for a delicious home-cooked Scottish dinner. And of course, for those who were so inclined, we had to try out that Scottish whiskey. It is good, by the way. And we want to thank Professor Peacock and his family for hosting us for the wonderful event. Before our departure from Glasgow, we toured the central train station where the 6888 soldiers boarded coaches for the ride to their first duty station in Birmingham, England. As 2023 tourists, we had the luxury of using a private motor coach to make our trek to Birmingham. Our 6888 ancestors would certainly have welcomed that opportunity. En route, we had quite a surprise. At one rest stop, we met Howard Hewitt and Carolyn Griffey of the famous R&B group Shalimar. That was really quite a treat. It was you never know who you're going to meet where. So from there, we joined the rest of the tour guests in Birmingham, England, for a total of 23 on the tour. 23. There were 16 descendants of the following 6888 soldiers: Virginia Lane, Annie Knight Jordan, Mary Frances Kearney, Hester Gibbons Massey, Indiana Hunt Martin, Vashti Murphy Matthews, and Odessa Taylor Marshall. We also had 5-6-888 advocates, our historian, retired Colonel Edna Cummings, and our tour director, Talia Ambrose of Stephen Ambrose Historical Tours. So, Natasha, I'll let you pick up from here and recap the visits to Birmingham, Stratford-upon-Avon, Bletchley Park, London, Normandy area, the wonderful service at the cemetery, and Rouen. And then I'll pick up on the back end and talk a little bit about Paris.
Sure. I'd be happy to. Let's see. So I came in through London. I had the opportunity to use the e-gates, where I was able to just scan myself in through border control. And then I took a bus ride. I want to say it was 2 hours from London to Birmingham. We stayed at the Grand Hotel, which is a very beautiful hotel. Just the decor in that hotel was amazing. It's actually the hotel where Malcolm X stayed.
Right. That was special, yes.
Yes. And so on the very first night, we had a very beautiful reception. And Colonel retired Edna Cummings, she introduced, all of the group to each other. We actually had to do a small introduction. That's where we also met Gary Stevens. It was my first time meeting him.
I think actually, I think it's Gary Stewart, I think.
Oh, sorry, Gary Stewart. I apologize. And Gary Stewart actually spent the next 3 days with us. He was a very excellent guide and resource during our stay.
And just for the audience, I want to say that Gary Stewart is the director of a group called Recognize Black Heritage out of Birmingham.
Yes.
So.
So we had a great reception that night, and then the very next day, which was June 22nd, that was the 75th anniversary of Windrush, or they call it Windrush Day. And so that is a day to recognize how Caribbean immigrants rebuilt the United Kingdom after World War II. And when Caribbean immigrants came to the UK, they were discriminated against. They experienced racism, hostility, were denied access to jobs and services. But above all, and through all of that, they demonstrated resilience. They overcame adversity. Even today, the descendants of the Windrush generation, they hold prominent positions throughout the community in Birmingham and throughout the United Kingdom. That day we attended three events. The first event started with the Lord Mayor. There were several leaders in the community who discussed the importance of that day. We had where there were poems and songs. There was also a second event, also with the Lord Mayor, and with several speeches, poems, and songs. And then the I guess that the pinnacle of that day was a concert that we all attended. In fact, Gary Stewart, he was listed in our program to be honored as one of the top influential people in Birmingham from the Windrush generation who contributes to society. So that was a great recognition for him. Colonel Cummings, she also made a presentation that evening about the 6-888 and discussed their significance to the crowd who was at that concert. There were several hundreds of people there at the concert that evening. So that was a great day. June 23rd, the following day, we went to the King Edward School, where the 6-888 was based. They entered Europe through Scotland and took a train to Birmingham. And so when we arrived at the school, we received a presentation from Helen Murdoch, I believe is her last name, from Women
Yes.
at War. And so, she discussed how they initially experienced racism, Or it, I'm not exactly sure if it was her or Colonel Cummings who said this part, but the part that I had in my notes was that they initially experienced racism when they arrived in Birmingham and was told they couldn't swim, you know, in the pool, but then it was sorted out. And then the battalion, they were basically able to swim and have access to all the facilities that they needed to have access to. So Helen, she gave us the history of military women who served in World War II. I mean, the breadth and detail of the information she provided was simply amazing. I learned so much during her brief. I didn't realize Queen Elizabeth II actually served in the military. That was new to me.
Yeah.
you know, it was really different being a service member myself or a retired service member, just learning that the minimum height for women was 5 feet and the maximum height for women was 6 feet to even serve in the military. That does not exist today. You know, so the fact that, you know, that was a thing was really enlightening to me. And then to learn about the process of sending email by shrinking letters to microfilm and air delivering it versus sending regular mail by sea, that was interesting to learn as well. So, you know, Helen, you know, I really love the uniform she wore, with the authentic accessories and the purses. And, you know, she even was wearing a authentic, you know, World War II watch. So she's great. So Colonel Retired Cummings, she did a presentation. She let us know how intelligent the women of the 6888 were, you know, how the majority of them joined with bachelor's and master's degrees already, which, you know, was something unexpected for this African-American all-woman unit, you know. But hey, they came in, you know, and they showed, you know, how capable they were, how strong they were. You know, I remember the story Colonel Cummings mentioned, and I believe she read it in Lieutenant Colonel Charity Adams' book about how, I want to say it might have been her commander threatened to send a lieutenant to show her how to run her unit, you know, and just these types of microaggressions that she mentioned happened back in 1945 kind of, you know, triggered me, you know, because I served too. And I remember experiencing these sort of microaggressions during my time of service as well. You know, so she mentioned how Ida B. Wells traveled to the UK also to show evidence of lynching and brutality that was happening in the United States, but British could not help. You know, but eventually the notes that Ida B. Wells did have actually put some KKK members into jail because of the detail she had. And then I learned, which, you know, unfortunately, I didn't realize this happened, but lynching was actually removed from the U.S. Constitution just last year in March. That was,
yeah.
Sure, I should have known that, but I did not know that it was just removed last year.
Yeah, the bill had come to the floor many, many times, but this last year was it finally passed.
Yeah, that's just, I mean, it's great, but it's also very disheartening, you know, to know that it took so long for that to happen. So after that, we left the school. Well, we were still on the school grounds, but then Colonel Cummings, she staged a photo in the same exact area where the 6888 had a formation in 1945. So that was a great experience to witness. And then, let's see, I have here, well, the next day, right? So the next day, June 24th, we departed Birmingham with Gary and I want to say her name is Marcel. She worked at the Black Walks company with Gary. And so that is where we went to Stapford upon Avon. We met with the mayor. We witnessed the celebration of Armed Forces Day, which I didn't know that that was their Armed Forces Day. We then walked to one of the statues where Colonel Cummings, she did several recreations of a past photo of the 6888 with the descendants. And then after that, we went to Bletchley Park. We learned about how the Code Girls were recruited from HBCUs. Colonel Cummings, she was the one who also mentioned how your mother, I believe, broke Morse code. That was your mom, right?
Yes, that's my mom, yeah.
Annie King, Annie Knight.
Any night, right.
Annie Knight, so she broke Morse code before she joined the 6888, and her title was Cryptologist Code Compiler. So, I mean, amazing work from your mom. And then let's see, the tour guide at Bletchley Park discussed how at the end of World War One, the Germans were horrified that the British kept breaking their codes. And then he really went into great detail about the rotors and how they were wired differently. So, you know, that was all great information to learn. So then we left and we arrived in London. I believe most of the group went to see Big Ben, to, you know, ride the huge Ferris wheel, and then also to maybe go shopping. And then I went to spend time with my cousins and aunt who live in Trottenham. My cousins were actually born in the UK, so it was really nice to see them because I hadn't seen them in, I don't know, like 15 years, something like that. And then let's see, with something else. I'm really sorry. Hold on. So then the following morning, we departed London, and that's when Kevin Heimel joined us on the tour.
I'm just going to add that Kevin Heimel is a historian for Stephen Ambrose Historical Tours. And so he wrote an article about the 6888 and one of the soldiers, Lena King. It is that article that got Tyler Perry's attention and led to the upcoming 6888 Netflix movie that Tyler Perry is doing and should be available in the fall. So I had to put in that little piece, but go, please go ahead.
Excellent, excellent. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to seeing that. And I really like the story he told about how that came to fruition. So amazing work from Mr. Heimel. A Himmel. So when we left the hotel, okay, so this is the part where the group went to the museum, but I unfortunately missed that part because I left my passport at the hotel, my passport and my wallet.
Every tour has to have an adventure. So that was it. It was an adventure. You having to go back and try to track down your wallet and passport. But fortunately, it was a successful endeavor. So.
Exactly. So as soon as I returned to the museum, the tour was complete. And then we immediately hopped on to the bus. And then we got on the ferry, which was a 6-hour ride, ferry ride to Normandy.
Crossing the English Channel, which is a great, that was wonderful. And I'm sure if you think about it, if I think back, you know, listening to my mother, the first time crossing the English Channel was an exciting time for them. Mm. You know, having completed a successful tour of duty in Birmingham, they were given 6 months to clear the mail in Birmingham and did it in 3 months. And it was so successful that they were rewarded by being sent to France to do the same thing again. But they had to cross the English Channel to get there. So.
Awesome. Yeah.
So then we landed, or we docked in one somewhere.
We arrived in, I want to say it was Providence, but then we ended up taking, I think, like a 30 minute bus ride to our hotel. So then, you know, we called it a night that night. And then the following morning.
And that was another night full of adventures, but those are not the adventures we're going to talk about on the podcast. I will just share a little story that the hotel was in a small, quaint town. I'm trying to recall the name of it. I won't recall the name of the hotel intentionally, but it kind of reminded us, for those of you who are movie buffs, it kind of reminded us of a cross between the hotel and The Shining by Stephen King. And then the hotel and the movie Hostel. So if you could take that kind of gives you a context. It was kind of an interesting little setting there. So
true.
Yeah.
And I know Talia, she did a great job with resolving those challenges that were had that night, from my recollection.
Yes.
So then for the second 2 days, we were in, so for June 25th and June 26th, we were in the Normandy area. So we went to Utah Beach, we went to Omaha Beach, we visited the what is it, the Airborne Museum. Unfortunately, I didn't get a chance to tour the Airborne Museum, but during that time is when we,
but yes, we did get a lot of World War II history. Kevin was fantastic in explaining to us what was going on the beaches at that particular time, and setting the context. And at least one of our attendees and descendants on the tour, her grandmother and grandfather met in Europe, and so she had the unique experience of having both parents in Normandy around the same time. And so she, you know, was writing her grandfather's name in the sand. It was really quite beautiful. But I just wanted to digress there for a second. But go ahead.
Oh, yeah, I remember. I remember that. That was definitely beautiful. Trey Rochelle. So what we learned at, was it Utah Beach and Omaha Beach? We learned about the, well, Colonel Cummings is the one who added this information about the 320th Barrage Balloon Battalion, and how they were responsible for, you know, cover and concealment as the soldiers came on to the beach. So, you know, it was my first time learning about them. So
yeah,
that was very special for me. In fact, throughout my military career, in almost all of my units, we did what's called staff rides, where we would learn about specific wars or battles. And I honestly have never heard about the African American contribution to, you know, military wars ever until now. So,
well, there's another one coming. Yeah, coming up this next season of the podcast, I'm going to be interviewing descendants of a group called the Montford Port Marines, Point Marines, and they were 10,000 black Marines. So that'll be, and they received the Congressional Gold Medal back in 2011 when President Obama was in office. So,
right.
Yeah.
Yes. Right. Exactly. You know, but you know, I didn't hear about the, you know, the Mom Point, I'm like getting tongue tied right now, but I didn't learn about them until, you know, later on in my career. In fact, I learned about the 688 during my 16th year of service, only when I was assigned to the U.S. Embassy in Libreville, Gabon, and I was preparing a presentation about African Americans in the military to present in English to an English course that the Gabonese military students were taking. And so when I saw, I guess, learned about the 688, I honestly didn't think it was real. I thought it was like a movie or something, you know. And then, you know, of course, my heart stopped and I was like, this is a real unit. Why didn't I ever know about them? Like, this is ridiculous.
And that's why many of us are dedicated to getting the story out. Because if you didn't learn until close to the end of your career, think about all the thousands and thousands of young people of all races who don't know the story.
Right, so. Exactly. I'm pretty sure there are soldiers serving right now who don't know about them. So, you know, that was part of why I, that's the reason why I came on the tour.
And we're going to talk some more about that in a minute.
Oh, okay. My apologies. So, moving on to Normandy American Cemetery. We learned that 60% of Americans who died in the war were returned to the United States to be buried, but 40% are buried overseas in the 13 American cemeteries that are managed by the American Monument Committee. So at Normandy American Cemetery, the descendants who were on the trip from the 6888, Trey Rochelle and Jerry organized a beautiful wreath laying ceremony. I remember the emotions and tears that day. It was just really beautiful and very organized. In fact, the cemetery director, if I'm not mistaken, he said that in all of the time that he served at that cemetery, he's never seen a wreath laying ceremony done the way you all organized it. So that's definitely high praises right there. I mean, it was so organized. I love the way you did it.
Thanks. I do want to add something for the audience. In the Normandy American Cemetery, there are only four women buried there. One was a nurse, I think, was in the Red Cross, and three of them were members of the 6888. They did not die in combat. They actually died in a Jeep accident and interred at Normandy. And so part of our tour was to go back and commemorate them, honor them and their service. And so that's where the wreath laying ceremony came to pass, how it came to pass.
Right.
It was quite emotional. It was very emotional.
Right. It was very emotional. For just so many different reasons. And Colonel Cummings, she also shared with us that there are 138 African American men and women buried at Normandy American Cemetery. And five of the men are missing. There's a wall there as well that discuss those who were missing in action. So five men from the 320th Barrage Balloon Battalion are missing. And so I am gonna recite the names of the three women that you mentioned earlier who died in the accident. So Private First Class, I'll start with Sergeant Dolores Brown, Private First Class Mary Bankston, and Private First Class Mary Barlow. Those are the three women from the 6888 who died.
Yeah, and they were very young women. I never had a chance to have families of their own. So anyway.
So then we went to Ruin. I'm trying to figure out if that was the same. No, that was the very next day. So on the 27th of June is when we departed the Normandy area. Well, the second hotel. And we went to visit the building where the 6888 worked and slept. The gentleman we met also had several photos of the 6888. I think some of the photos had been seen before, but then some hadn't been seen.
I was agreeing with you.
Right, right. So right. I remember, folks trying to take pictures of the pictures. And then after that, there was a ceremony with the mayor of Petite-Quéville to rename a street after Lieutenant Colonel Terry Adams. The mayor, she made a presentation. Colonel Cummings, she thanked the mayor and the city for the honor of having the street renamed. And then each descendant of the 6888 also signed two of the street signs. After the ceremony. And then yes.
And one of them is being given to Charity Adams' children.
Right, right.
So they keep saying.
Yeah, that's just beautiful. And then after we left Ruin, we traveled to Paris.
So yes, that's the last leg of our trip. It was a whirlwind. For some people, it was what, 10 days, I think, if you started off in Birmingham, and for those of us who start off in Scotland, it was I think it was a 14-day whirlwind. And so we ended up with about a night and a half in Paris, well, but 2 nights in Paris. Just for a historical note, in November 1945, about half of the 6888 Battalion went to Paris, while the remainder returned home to the U.S. That because at that point the war was over, and some did go and do some to perform some duties in Paris to wrap up their stay. My mother was one of those who actually was in Paris, which had a great influence on her and her decisions to name her children, her daughters anyway. For those of us who were the 6888 ancestors, we wanted to experience, wanted to get the full experience. So we went to the different places, different hotels, the Foyer Lafayette, where the soldiers stayed, overlooking a beautiful square, Monthelon, I believe it's called, with bustling little shops. And you kind of, as you stood there at an angle, you could look out and say what it must have been like for them. Again, young African American women from the US, away from home for the first time, having had a very successful tour of duty. And then you're in Paris. I mean, it's like, so many young people growing up dream of Paris. And so we could kind of like feel what they were feeling. From there, we went to the Hotel Etat Eunice, which is where the 6888 officers stayed. And then we finished up at the five-star Hotel George Sink, or George V. And that's where Major Charity Adams met with the World War II European Communications Zone Commander, Lieutenant General C.H. Lee. Again, you got a mid-20s black woman leading the group, meeting with these top generals, again, having commanded a successful a battalion in the 40s. This completed the circle, leaving me with a better appreciation for both the adventures and the adventures of the 6888 Battalion. So yeah, it was a wonderful tour. The tentative plan right now is to take some of the feedback we received and maybe do another tour in 2025. So anyone who's interested, keep an eye out. Stephen Ambrose Historical Tours will be looking to get some more descendants and advocates on that tour 2 years from now. But I want to
Well,
segue. Go
I was just going to say, well, I'm definitely in.
ahead. Well, then you can take your son. He'll be a little older then, and he might. I'm sure he'd appreciate the trip. So I wanted to segue and talk about you. Now, you're a native of. Where's your home?
I live in Georgia.
But are you a native of Georgia?
No, I was born in New York, but
Okay.
I left there when I was 10, and then I grew up in Georgia. So I usually just claim Georgia.
Okay, that's fine. That's my home state as well. So, please tell me about your educational and army career. So, what type? When did? How old were you when you enlisted? What type of work did you do when you were in the army?
Okay,
So let's
so
just.
I basically went to a college called St. Paul's College. It's a historically black college and university, but it closed down back in 2013 due to financial difficulty. But I attended St. Paul's College for 4 years. I took ROTC,
And where's that located? Where was it located?
Lawrenceville, Virginia.
Okay.
And so I was the very first recipient of a 3-year ROTC scholarship at my school. And then I graduated from St. Paul's College without any debt or anything like that. My initial my branch was the Signal Corps. And so my initial obligation was to do 4 years active, 4 years reserve. But then when I got to my 4-year mark, they were like, okay, are you going to stay in? Or are you going to go into the reserves? And I was like, I'm staying in. I'm having a blast. I'm going to stay forever.
And so you where are the various places you were stationed?
So my very first assignment was South Korea. I was there for a year. And then I moved to, is it South Carolina, Fort Jackson, South Carolina, where I worked in a basic training unit for a couple of years. After that, I went to airborne school and learned how to jump out of perfectly good airplanes. And then, of course, after you do that, you're sent to Fort Bragg, North Carolina, where I jumped out of more airplanes. And then during that assignment is when I was deployed to Operation Iraqi Freedom 3. And I remember while I was working, I was a watch officer. So basically I did shift work, monitoring the communications network because I was a signal officer. And so I remember one night working and I received a phone call from a lieutenant colonel who I actually interviewed with for command several months prior, but he didn't hire me to be a commander, right? So there I was working my job, and then he called literally in the middle of my shift and asked if I was ready to command, like in the middle of the war. And so I'll be honest with you, I was scared, right? So I told him I wasn't ready. I was like, no, I'm not ready. And so he's like, oh, okay, well, I want you to just think about it, let me know. So I went and I told my boss. So I was a captain at the time. I was 20. I think I want to say I was 25 years old. So I went and I told my boss and I said, sir, Lieutenant Colonel called and asked if I was ready to come in. I told him no. And he was like, you said what? He screamed at me. You said what?
And
And
so
then,
he sent you right back, right?
right. Yeah, he did. He said, don't you know he already called me and asked if you were ready? He asked the brigade commander, we all believe in you. We all said you're ready. In fact, you're being selected ahead of people who are supposed to command before you. So he's like, you better go in that office right now. You call him back, Captain. So anyway, I went and I called him, and that just goes to show, I mean, I definitely had confidence, but I think it was helpful also to have the faith and belief and confidence of my supervisor because, they're the ones who knew my potential and knew what I was capable of doing. So I want to say that that was very helpful to have. So anyway, I told them yes. Within a few weeks, I was on a Black Hawk, flying into Balad, Iraq. And so that's where I took command. And it was literally the best assignment I ever had while in the military, being responsible for over 100 troops. So I definitely relate and can connect, although, I mean, Lieutenant Colonel Charity Adams, battalion command is definitely way different than company command, where she was responsible for 855, I was responsible for 100, but just the it's just an amazing responsibility to be a commander. So after my command in Iraq, actually after we redeployed, and then from Fort Bragg, I went to Germany, lived in Germany, Stuttgart, Germany for 3 years. And then after Germany, I decided to apply to become a foreign area officer, specializing in the sub-Saharan Africa region. And so my application was accepted. And then I went off to learn French for 6 months. And then I went to do training for 18 months. No, I'm sorry. I went to do training for two years. So the first year of training was basically the Army gave me a budget where my mission in life was to travel and learn about the different cultures, social, economic, political aspects of different countries on the African continent. So I had an opportunity to travel to 16 different countries during that year. I just met so many amazing people during that time. And then I went off to get,
Sounds incredible.
it's incredible. I'm sorry. Let me tell you, the foreign area officer branch in the United States Army is really the Army's best kept secret, in my personal humble opinion. You know, I had an opportunity to work at a U.S. embassy. I had so much responsibility, you know, and I was a major, you know, so I was responsible for the security cooperation and working with the Gabonese military, working with the Sao Tome military as a major. So that was really an amazing experience for me to do that. And so I'm sorry. So they sent me to graduate school where I got a master's in public administration and international relations. And then once I was done with my, you know, educational
training. Now that was at Syracuse?
Yeah, that was at Syracuse University. And so when I was done with Syracuse, actually, while I was at Syracuse University, I got pregnant. And then I received assignment orders to work at the U.S. Embassy in Gabon. So my son was 4 months old when we arrived in Gabon. And then we were there for 3 and a half, almost 4 years. He literally left speaking French. So, you know, it was my, you know, job to figure out how to get him to maintain his French. So I ensured that when we moved back to the United States, he went to French immersion schools, you know, when he was in preschool, through elementary school, you know, and then through the time I retired. So we moved back to Maryland. So I retired out of Maryland. And then I want to say I retired out of Maryland in 2019. And then in 2021 is when I decided to move back home to Georgia. And so, you know, found my son in French immersion school in Georgia. So he's still in elementary school, like learning French. So in fact, when we were in, oh, I forgot to talk about this, but Trey Rochelle and I, we had these little mini missions while we were on the tour. So during the free moments, even though I know it was a whirlwind, we made it a point to find postcards to send back to our families. And so
I'm still waiting for ours to arrive.
They oh, wow. Wow. It took 2 weeks for ours to arrive. I'm still waiting on a couple of them, particularly the ones from, I want to say the ones from France.
Right. It takes a while. Yeah, but, I interrupted your story. I'm sorry.
Oh, I think what I wanted to say was that because my son speaks French, he's been to Paris before, but it was when he was a baby, you know, so my plan is to, you know, is to take him to France and he can get to practice his French and all that good stuff. So he can actually see why he's learning it.
Well, but there's so many French speaking countries you can take him to, even closer than France.
Yeah, right, definitely. I mean, Montreal, you know, we could go to Saint Martin, we could go to, you know, definitely a Francophone island. No, you're right. I mean, in fact, the country where he learned French in was Gabon.
Right.
French speaking. So, so anyway, I've been retired. I mean, we live here. And right now I just run my online business.
So what's your online business?
So my online business, we started out selling silk lined military headwear because when I was serving, my headwear was drying out my hair and causing breakage. So we started selling silk liners for military hats. But then we started branching into satin lined D9 sorority headwear and historically Black college and university headwear. So
how do we find you? So I want to make sure. How do people find your business? They want to buy some.
We can be found at keepyourheadgear.com. And we're on all social media platforms under keepyourhairheadgear.com.
Keep your hair.
Headgear.
Headgear. Okay. Good, because I'm sure someone might be interested in taking a look, you know. Let me ask you a couple of questions. So what do you think of the importance of the 6888 is to you as an African American vet?
So for me, the 6888, they pretty much, you know, laid the foundation. You know, they were the first. You know, without the first, there can't be a second or a third, you know, or fourth. So, you know, just their ability to go and show how capable and competent they were during World War II. No one did what they were able to do. And so it pulls a very dear place in my heart. Like I said before, you know, to learn about them and what they did during my 16th year of service, I really wish I would have learned about them earlier on. You know.
Any thoughts about how your experiences, now that you've learned about more about the 6888, any thoughts about how your experiences in the Army compared to those that they might have experienced? Some things you have in common, some things obviously going to be different because of the generational differences. But any thoughts on that?
I would say definitely the... So I grew up in a, like the high school I went to, we didn't have any, it was an all black high school, right? And then I went to a historically black college and university. So I don't really recall anyone other than African American, right? So going into the US Army was my very, I don't know, somewhat very significant experience of being exposed to Caucasian people, right? So, and also, you know, experiencing those microaggressions,
right?
Of where, you know, people make you feel like you're not as smart as them when you are. I can definitely relate to the 6888, you know, based on the stories that were told during the tour by Colonel Cummings and then also from some of the descendants. So, you know, just to see how they persevered and how strong they were, you know, Lieutenant Colonel Charity Adams, how she stood up for her battalion, you know, and how she didn't let a senior officer, you know, minimize her or degrade her or really disrespect her role. That means a lot to me, because I know that there were times when, you know I should have stood up for myself, you know. But then I also do see how I was able to gain that strength or courage or belief in myself, you know. And I mean, I mentioned it in my story earlier about, you know, about command. So to me, I just, when I think about the 6888, I think of strength.
I would agree with you on that, strength and bravery. So, so now let's, you started to mention this earlier and I said I'd get back to it. What compelled you to join the Legacy Tour?
What compelled me to join? Okay, you want me to tell the story from the school again?
No, then why did you decide to join the tour?
I decided to join the tour because I learned about them so late in my service. It was really, I don't know, it wasn't a lot of information that I did learn back then. So this was in 2015, right? So then I retired in 2019, and then I remember I was following Colonel Cummings, her Facebook, not Facebook, a Twitter account. I cannot remember the name of it, but I was fo we were following each other on Twitter, right? And I kept seeing the posts about the 6AAA, and I was like, oh my God, I remember reading about them, 4 years ago, right? So then, I kept seeing the posts, and then I was sharing and retweeting and, reposting her posts. And this went on for a while. So then I finally sent her a message. I want to say I can't remember which platform it was on. Maybe it was on Facebook. I sent her a message and I said, hi, ma'am, I really love what you're doing. How can I help? because this was when she was advocating for the 6AAA Congressional Gold Medal. So I asked her, how can I help? So, she told me, oh yeah, you have to send letters to your senators and congressmen and women. So I said, okay, great. She said, oh, I have a template. So she sent me the template. I sent the letters. And then I was thinking, oh, let me contact the chapter of my sorority, because at the time I was the military attaché of the chapter I was associated with my sorority, Zeta Phi Beta Sorority Incorporated. And I contacted my chapter president and told her about the 6AAA and asked if we could send letters to our legislators on behalf of the chapter, because I had already sent it as an individual. So I could send it on behalf of the chapter. She said, absolutely. So, I basically took Colonel Cummings' template, and then we created a chapter template, but we included information about Zeta Phi Beta and our support for the military, right? So then she signed it. I sent it out to the legislators, and then it's like, okay, well, that's from the chapter level. I wonder if we could get this sent, from a regional level or from an international level, because our sorority has a international military advisory committee, right? Where we have military attaches in each of the chapters. So the word or the message ended up going from the regional military attache up to the international level. And then next thing you know, I mean, it was like in a short time frame, actually within maybe 3 months, there was a letter from the international chair, basically with the template, directing all the chapters to, help support or advocate for the initiative for the Congressional Gold Medal. And so next thing you know, the different chapters, they were sending letters. They were requesting meetings with Colonel Cummings. They were showing the documentary to their chapters. So it was really great to a great thing to see. And yes, I created a spreadsheet to help track which senators received emails, not emails, but which senators and congressmen had co-sponsored and which ones needed to be sent letters. But I know that Colonel Cummings and Master Sergeant retired Helm Frazier,
Elizabeth L. Frazier, yes.
they had a huge team, I mean, from several states helping them to, get co-sponsors. So they, my assistance was very small in that effort, but I think a lot of small efforts, helped
Come together.
come together, right?
It's the whole, it takes a village. So,
Right. So that's how I met Colonel Cummings when I reached out to her. So then I heard about the she invited me to the June 2002 ceremony. So I was in Georgia at the time, so I flew up for that. And then I saw her Facebook post about the tour. Actually, she mentioned the tour to me, and then I saw the post about the tour. And then, it all came together from there. I did join sort of at the last minute. But I'm glad it all worked out.
Okay, but something must have was there any particular thing that you sought to learn, gain, or understand as a consequence of going on the tour? I mean, seeing an advertisement for a tour is different from actually investing both money and time in that. And so I was just wondering whether there was any particular factor that made you do this versus take this tour versus do something else. I
Oh,
mean,
so well,
just
I don't know if I mentioned this before, but I'm a single mom, right? So my son, he was going to be gone at that time, and for me, it was the timing was perfect.
and so the stars were aligned, as they say.
Right, the stars were aligned, and to be frankly honest with you, when I travel to different places, I like to be immersed into the culture. I like to learn about the history. I mean, I like to have fun, right? But I really do love to absorb the history of different places. So I just felt like this was the perfect mix of, okay, we're traveling to Europe, hello, right? And then we're learning about military history, okay? And then we're learning about African American history, we're learning about women's history. So
It all came together.
right. I did have friends who said, oh, you should be on a beach somewhere,
And you
no.
and then you t sent them pictures from the beaches of Normandy, but from Omaha Beach and Utah Beach, and said, "See, I did get to the beach."
You should be on a beach somewhere partying. And I'm like, you guys don't understand. This is a, to me, it was also a once in a lifetime experience, right? Because this was the first one.
Right,
Right?
it's
This is
true.
the first one is not going to happen again. I mean, I know that we're definitely going to do something in 2025, but this first one that we did, it can't be replicated, really.
It's true. So, want to share any reflections on the insights you gained, on important lessons you gained from this tour? I mean, if you had a chance to kind of reflect on, well, you did. I mean, I know when you wrote a post, so I was just curious if you wanted to share some of your just kind of overall reflections and anything that you learned that you didn't know, any particularly any insights that you gained.
I think just being around, for me, just being around the 6888 descendants. I mean, that in itself for me was just very special.
And why is that?
Because you are the only direct links to the very first and really only African American woman unit to deploy to World War II. No, there's literally no other unit like the 6888.
Well, we were the only one in the European theater of operations. I think that there were some nurses, I guess, in Africa. Black nurses, I think, in Africa. But they were not in the Women's Army Corps.
They weren't a battalion.
I'm not sure. I don't know all of the military lingo, but there were some other African American women, but not in European theater of operations. So they were doing something different in that
Right,
time.
right. Because the 6888, they really are like they're the only one. You know, even today, there are no all, you know, African American women units.
Right. Right.
You know, and I understand that, you know, units are now integrated, right? But yeah, nobody else is like them.
So any thoughts about, so you learned a lot of new things while you were, or gained some new insights and learned some new things while you were on this tour. Any thoughts about how you plan to use that knowledge to help educate others about hidden figures like the 6888? Because that, as we know, there are so many hidden figures in our community, what, not just the military, but, in asking you the question, I'm hoping that the commitment that everybody makes is to make sure those stories are told in whatever sphere that they're in, whether it's, it doesn't matter whether it's music, the Army, the Navy, the Marines, or some other field. So I was just thought about your own commitment to educating another generation or just educating others about these hidden figures.
Right. So my largest platform would be the platform for my business. The majority of my followers on social media and, you know, through our email subscription, the majority of them are military because that's, you know, how my company started. And then we branched into other organizations. But for, you know, Black History Month and for Women's History Month, we do, or we have been since 2019, posting about the 6888, just to let them know who they are. And sometimes we get comments saying, you know, they didn't know.
Right.
So
I think even the, it's funny being a descendant. I mean, even the descendants had very different levels of knowledge. I mean, because we knew, for example, when my mother talked about her service, so we knew she was in the service. We didn't know that it was the 6888 per se, but we knew she was in the service. And then, you know, of course, as you probably learned from talking to other descendants, some of the fat mothers didn't talk about it at all. And they didn't really learn until later in life. So I think for all of us, this is a there was a process of discovery as well. We're learning, we're getting to view our mothers, grandmothers, aunts in a different light, not just as mom, grandma, and aunt, but we're getting to see them as young, vibrant, brave women, and I think I'm trying to understand them better about, well, you had to be really special to enlist at that time and to go into a war zone at that time. And so I think it's been an enriching experience for all of us and an eye-opening experience for all of us as well as descendants.
Yeah, they're amazing.
So yeah. I know the first time, you know, I'm the oldest of the three of us in my family, and I was the executrix of my parents' estate. And so the last of the boxes from the house from Georgia came to my house. And then once the battalion got the Congressional Gold Medal, my sister called and said, "Have you been in those boxes in the basement to see if there's anything in there? Mom's stuff from the 6888. It's like, I hate going through boxes. But I went through, and it's just going through. Yeah, I was sitting with my daughter, my grown daughter, and it was like, wow, grandma did this? You know, she's seen these pictures, and you know, she knows grandma is an older person.
Right.
And to look, being the middle generation here, to see the expressions on my daughter's face as she reflects back on what her grandmother must have been like at that time in that space is a gift in and of itself. So.
Right. They had a lot of responsibility.
Right. Right. But I think it enriches our sense of who they were as human beings. So, and you have any closing reflections for us, or any closing comments as we get to wrap up tonight about the tour, about the 6888? Yeah.
Just that if anyone ever has an opportunity to do any future tours or activities, or to support any 6888 initiatives, I would definitely recommend that they do so. And then I definitely believe in continuing to tell these stories, or else they'll be forgotten about.
Yeah. And God knows we can't afford to have that happen, because there's enough enough efforts around in some of the states to ban history as it is. So, well, Natasha, I want to thank you so much for joining us tonight and for discussing your work as an advocate, your experiences in the service, and your insights on this recent tour. And for the audience, for more insights on the Legacy Tour, I encourage you, the listeners, to check out the recent article in Afro.com. It's entitled Descendants of the 6888, Retrace the Steps of Their Ancestors. And it's written by, of course, woman we've talked about all evening, retired Colonel Edna Cummings.
Thank you, Doctor.
And thank you.
To our audience, thank you for listening to Nexus 818 Podcast. I hope you enjoyed our show. If you have questions or topics you'd like to discuss, or you'd like to be a guest on the show, please email the show at nextus818podcast@gmail.com. That's nextus818podcast@gmail.com. I like to end each show with a favorite reflection. Tonight, I'll share a quote from William Arthur Ward. Before you act, listen. Before you react, think. Before you spend, earn. Before you criticize, wait. Before you pray, forgive. Before you quit, try. Let me end with a note about upcoming episodes. August the 18th marks the one-year anniversary of Nexus 818 Podcast. We are deeply grateful for the opportunity to share and engage with you. We're taking a short anniversary vacation to work on exciting episodes for Season 2. In addition to more episodes about the 6888, we plan to introduce you to another group of World War II African-American heroes, the Montford Point Marines. See you for our next show on August the 16th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. You can catch the show on Amazon Music, Apple Podcasts, Audible, Google Podcasts, and Spotify for podcasters.